This is PhotoBizX episode number 221. And today's special guests are husband and wife wedding photographers, Sam and Steve Vaughan. And we're talking sales and how you can comfortably sell in your photography business. That interview's coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images and welcome to this episode of the podcast. Looking forward to bringing you this interview with Sam and Steve. Steve is a sales consultant and he used to do sales for or with big corporations. So he has a lot of experience with selling. And Sam, on the other hand, is the creative part of the duo that makes up Sam and Steve Photography. They are, like I said, wedding photographers in the UK. And the theme for today's interview is sales and selling. And if that's something that you're uncomfortable doing in your business, I think you're going to get a lot from the interview today. Before we get into that, one of the topics that's come up regularly with me is how I fit so much in. I talk a fair bit about the cycling that I do most days, 5 to 6 days a week. I get out on my bike. I've always got holidays planned. But there's always something going on in addition to the work, the photography, the family stuff. Yeah, and the topic is, or the question usually is, how do you fit so much in? And for me, it becomes, I want to say, a matter of prioritizing. But it's more than that because a lot of things have equal priority. You know, my family life, my fitness and health, my business, the podcast, you, these are all high priority items in my life. But I think the answer, the real answer to how I fit as much as I do into my days or my life is by just putting things in my diary that I absolutely want to do and not miss out on. So if I'm talking about fitness and health and going for a bike ride or training on my bike daily or 5 or 6 days a week, I'll put those times into the diary at the start of the week or a week out or a month out, and work and other things revolve around those times because getting out on my bike is a priority each day. It's something that I want to do, that I feel like I need to do to maintain sanity and also to stay fit and healthier. And it's something that I love to do. So I don't want to have that be the first thing that gets pushed away just because there's an inquiry or a consultation or anything that pops up. Because usually what I found is that most things can be put around my calendar. They can work around what I have planned in my day. I don't need to fit in with my clients and everything that they want all the time. My life and my family takes priority, and then the work side comes next. Still all important, but it's just, I guess, a matter of prioritizing what's more important each day or each week or each year for me in my life. For bigger things, I know that this week I have a meetup in Sydney with PhotoBizX premium members, and then I have another one the following week or two, I think. I have to check the diary in Melbourne and then in a month or two in Brisbane. So I put those things into the diary and I absolutely know they'll be going ahead, that I'm going to be there for those meetups. And I can't wait. I'm looking forward to that. In addition to that, I look at my holidays and which trips I want to do. So I'm going to France or back to France in July for 3.5 weeks. So that goes into the diary as soon as I know that I'm going. And I also have the same dates booked out for July 2018 because I know that I'm going to be returning to France with a group of mates to go cycling again. So once that's in the diary, that's set in stone, and I know that I've got to do what I've got to do to get to France in July. And I'm talking not only fitness and health, but I'm talking financially and the work that has to be done to get me there at that time of year and what's got to be done in the lead up. This week, Linda and I have spent a bit of time going over our diaries and looking at what we want to do, what we want to fit in, what we want to accomplish as far as trips and holidays and time away from the business, and we put those in the diary together. So in addition to the Australian meetups, I know that in 2018, I really want to see you if you live in the UK. I'm planning to stay back in the UK after my France trip, and I'm not sure exactly how long yet. That hasn't been finalized, but I really would love to see you if you are a UK listener and you're based anywhere in the UK, so Ireland, Wales, Scotland, or England. I'll plan that as it gets closer, but I'll put that in the diary now and block out a week or two to go and do that, which is pretty exciting. And then later in the year, in 2018, I'm planning, and I did mention this a while ago, to do a trip from LA to New York, staying with and interviewing photographers as I travel across the country. That's the plan. So I haven't got any more detail than that, but I'm going to be putting that in the diary and that'll be blocked out. And I know that I've got something to work towards and to plan and to make happen. And I know that when it comes around to those times, my friends here on the coast, here where I live, they'll be saying, how do you fit this in? Like, how do you get time to go and do this? And I guess what they don't understand is it's been planned a year or two in advance. You know, it's already in the diary and I've been working towards it behind the scenes and planning the trip well in advance. It's not ever just a drop of the hat thing. Although those trips are nice too, but they don't happen as often. I guess the message is if you want to do something in your business or your life in regards to travel or holidays or sports or whatever, make time in your diary, either daily or weekly or a year in advance, to do the things that you want to do. I mean, the business will be here when you get back. And if you do your prior preparation and you know what you've got to do in the lead up to these trips or holidays, then you do that. You get stuck in it and make those happen. It might mean you have to get up early some days or work late or some weekends. But, you know, they'll be the sacrifices that I'll make in the lead up to of the other fun things that I want to be doing in my life. So, yeah, I guess it just comes down to a matter of prioritizing. And the funny thing is, you know, when I go on these trips or do these things, particularly the trip to France, Linda gets so embarrassed. She thinks, what will people say? People think we're rich. You know, you can't keep going on these trips. And I'm like, well, we're not rich. I mean, financially, we're not rich. We just plan, or I make plans to do these things and make sure the work's done beforehand. And we shouldn't have to worry about what other people think. We should be living the lives that we want. And it's the same for you. If you want to be doing something in your life, whether it's a trip to some remote part of Africa or a street photography trip in India, then put it in the diary, set the time aside and make the plans to make that happen. And you can do it. And that's the best thing. I get so excited talking about travel and holidays and meeting up with you, going cycling with my mates. I mean, life is, it's too short, it's too much fun, it's too good to just be working all the time. And I think if you want to do these things, you can. You absolutely can. And yeah, it's more difficult if you have kids, particularly if you have young kids, and you might have to change your plans slightly. But really, if you want to go and do something and you have kids, take them with you. Go and do it. Don't let them stop you from living the life that you want, or don't see them as, I don't want to say hindrance, but I mean, I've got friends. Linda and I have friends and they have kids too. And one of their kids is younger than ours. And they say, well, we can't wait to be in the position you're in. You know, it's only another 16 years away. We just laugh. It's like, well, go and do it now and take your young kids with you. The kids aren't an anchor. They will go with you. They will adapt. And I think it's, life's too short to not do the things that you want to be doing. I hope I'm making sense, and I hope this is a suitable intro to the podcast episode. This stuff excites me. I love filling out my diary, and I love coming to work knowing that I've got these things to look forward to. It would frighten you if I listed, you know, the cycling trips and races and holidays and events and things that I've got in my diary already, because they are priorities for me. And then I'll fit my weddings and portrait sessions and commercial shoots around those, and my client meetings and the podcast and everything else. You know, that, well, I shouldn't really say the podcast, because the podcast happens every Monday no matter what. So when I go to France in July, as a good example, I know that the podcast doesn't just go on hold for a month. I make sure that I have my interviews recorded and ready to go, and I'll be releasing. So I'll have to do some work while I'm in France and release a podcast episode every Monday, because that's what I want to do. That's a priority for me. That's something I'm passionate about, and I won't let anything get in the way of that. If I get a wedding inquiry for July and I have the trip already in the diary, then I'm not doing that wedding. That holiday is more important to me than photographing that wedding and making that few thousand dollars. In my business, I've taken the decision to do that. I'll either outsource the wedding photography to one of my associate shooters, and if they're not available for whatever reason, then I'll make a referral to another photographer. someone that I know, like, and trust. And I'm sure that referral will come back to me at some stage anyway. I just won't let things get in the way of enjoying life. And as far as getting the podcast out and an interview released every single week, you know, whether or not I'm on holidays, to me, that's a fun part of travel. I love that I'm able to do that and be mobile and still have the life that I want to be living. And you can do exactly the same with your business. So if you want to be traveling, if you want to be shooting destination weddings, or if you want to, I mean, to me, photography is one of the easiest things to take on the road, particularly with Facebook and running ads and promotions that way. I mean, if I plan to do a trip around Australia with my family, I know that I can make a living shooting family portraits as I go. I would advertise via Facebook, targeting the town that I'm going to be in next, saying that I'm looking for people to photograph, families, kids, farmers, business owners, whatever my specialty is. I'd make sure there's a good offer, and then I'd get there and have shoots to shoot, and I'd be enjoying the holiday at the same time. And then I could do in-person sales while I'm there, or do online sales if that's a better fit. And then I'd be advertising for the next town before I left for that town. And I think the same thing, well, I don't know if it would work all around the world. You would need to be in an English-speaking country or be targeting English speakers if you're going to countries where English is a second language. But I know there's got to be opportunities wherever you go. So don't let your business stop you or be a hindrance for achieving the things that you want to achieve, or doing the things, or seeing the places, or visiting the destinations that you want to visit. You know, take it with you, make it part of your life, and just, yeah. It sounds like I'm going through a midlife crisis. I'm not, I promise. I'm just excited for how much fun life is, how good things are, and how we really are living in a stage or an age where we have so much opportunity. You know, if someone tells you that you can't do something, then you are hanging out with the wrong people or listening to the wrong advice. You can absolutely do whatever you want to do. All right, that's enough preaching. If you feel the same way, or if you want to have a discussion about this, then hit me up in the comments area or on Facebook and let's have a chat about it. But I'm passionate about this stuff and I think it's important. And on the topic of, I said I was going to get off this, but on the topic of people thinking that we're rich and Linda's feeling uncomfortable about that, you know, I don't drive around, or neither of us drive around in fancy cars. We do have a mortgage, but we don't live to excess. We know what we have to put aside to do the things that we want to do. And we live within our means, and that's all part of going on these trips and living life the way that we want to. Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I hope this wasn't too much of a rant and too much of a shock for the start of today's podcast. Let's get on with the show.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In the last episode, I interviewed Nate Graheck. He is one of my favorite guests to have on the show. I love his passion for teaching, for photography, for business, for marketing. It's so cool, and he's amazing at what he does. What I can't understand is the lack of comments or feedback that I've had since that interview with Nate. I mean, I think what he shared about Facebook ad targeting and using landing pages was absolute gold. I love the idea of sending a potential client to a page on my website with no other navigation. They can't escape that page once they get there. And the only option is to engage with the content. And whether that's leaving an email address or make an inquiry about that particular promotion that is targeted to them and it relates perfectly to the ad that you've run, I think that is absolute gold. It's something that internet marketers have been doing for a long time. And I think as photographers, we have to move and progress and develop our sales and marketing skills to stay one step ahead of what we were doing, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, we have to work smarter. And if you want to target a particular genre, whether it's gay and lesbian couples, mothers of newborn children, engaged couples, you know, if we can target those genres and then send them to a landing page on our website with a specific offer that only relates to them with no other distractions, yeah, I think that's genius. I really can't believe there hasn't been more discussion about that interview with Nate, because he definitely knows his stuff. Let me know your thoughts. Have you tried something like that? Are you going to try something like that? Have you had a chance to listen to that interview yet? Because if you haven't, you really need to get back and check it out.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
Alrighty, we're going to jump into this interview with Sam and Steve. If you are hearing this announcement, then it means you're listening to the free podcast episode, which is absolutely fine. You are going to get a ton of information and implementable ideas from Sam and Steve in the interview. But I want to let you know right up front that you will only be hearing half the interview with Sam and Steve today. I do save the second half for premium members only. If you are a wedding photographer and you like the idea, actually, you know what? That's not even the right wording. If you know there are bookings to be made at wedding expos or wedding fairs and you feel uncomfortable about that idea or you've had no success at wedding fairs or expos, then you probably want to hear the second half of the interview with Sam and Steve, because this is where they book most of their clients, or a lot of them anyway. And in the second half of the interview, I go deep into exactly how they approach the wedding fairs that they go to, what they display, how they display it, where they stand, what sort of communication they have with their clients, how they follow up after the wedding expo, how they initiate conversation with their clients, and what is it that separates them from all the other photographers that are always competing at these wedding expos. You know, why are they able to book so many weddings when other photographers struggle to do so? So that's what we cover in the second half. If you want to check that out and you're not a premium member, you can trial it for $1. Head over to photobizx.com/try. And for $1, you hear the full interview with Sam and Steve today. You get access to the full back catalogue. I'll invite you to the amazing Facebook group, which I was told on the weekend by a new subscriber that after he checked out the Facebook group, he was like, whoa. He says, I can't believe how active and good this group is. This is worth the cost of the membership alone. So that was really nice to read that from a new premium member. So yeah, look, that's all there. photobizx.com/try. Let's get into this interview.
Welcome to another great eye for business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Hey guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
So we've got Sam and Steve both with us. So maybe we can start by Steve, you giving us an idea of what your roles are, what your role is in the business, and then Sam can tell me about her role in the business.
Sure. Well, we're both directors of the company that we run. So we're wedding photographers. I do a bit of sales training and sales consultancy as well. But if you look at how we work, we both photograph together, shoot weddings together, probably 95% of the time. I tend to be the sort of technical guru, so I'm the one that's into all the gadgets and all the lenses and the cameras and the software, and I'm the one that probably spends the money on the gear. And Samantha is much more the creative part of the partnership. Would you agree, dear?
Yeah. Steve really got me into photography when we got together. The first thing he bought me was a secondhand camera. I have an arty background. I do a lot of watercolours and pencil drawings, so I've got the eye. So between the two of us, we work very well, kind of to say he's got the technical background, but I spot the pictures that he wouldn't even think about. So we work quite well together.
Every time.
And was it your business to start with, Sam, or did you start this together?
We started this together, really. We were asked by a work colleague of mine if we would mind photographing her wedding as a favour, because she liked the photography that we did. And then from that, we ended up doing the matron of honour's wedding and then the groom's best man's wedding. Kind of thought, well, we're obviously doing something right here. Perhaps we should try a little bit harder and make something of this. And it just grew from there, really. In the last 3 or 4 years, we've been doing at least 30 to 35 weddings a year. So
it's worth just pointing out, I guess, really, we're sort of looking back about 5 years, 6 years at this time, Andrew. And when we first started shooting weddings and it took off, as Sam said, that Sam quit a day job and I carried on doing my day job. I was a senior manager for a big American corporate in the scientific equipment field. And I was doing that until about 3 years ago, until I decided that the sort of way of life, the stress and everything else of working for multi-billion-dollar companies was something we didn't want to do anymore. And the business had grown to such a stage where I could sort of walk away from that as well. So I guess it was Sam's business with my involvement to start with, and then it's become both our business over the last couple of years.
So you're both working full-time in the business now, or are you still doing some consultancy work, Steve?
I do sales training, sales consultancy under a separate brand, but it all goes into one company. So effectively, we have one company with different business activities all feeding into that company. So the photography is the main part of that company, but I do a bit of training, a bit of consultancy, a bit of sales skills work on a local basis in the Oxfordshire area, really, with local companies, local businesses.
Okay, so not other photographers?
No, not yet.
Fantastic. Okay. So, Sam, when you started the business, and even when Steve came into the business, did he have a big say on how to do sales, how to increase sales?
Yes, because he's got more of the experience than I have. I mean, when we first got together years ago, he was UK and Ireland sales manager, and he was running events all over the area, like exhibitions and things, and was training people on how to sell on the stand. So he taught me, really, and we've kind of grown from there. And I think it's our personalities as well as how we understand we've got to sell that makes us what we are, really.
Absolutely. So can you give us an idea then of, you know, I guess what your average client would spend with you today?
We're up to, in pound terms, typically about £2,000-£2,500. So I guess Aussie dollars, that's about £4,500 to £5,000, something like that. You know, we've got a variety of packages, and we're always willing to work with a customer to look at, you know, what they want, what their available budget is. And Sam laughs at me, but I hate the word package, because every wedding to me should be different. You know, you're not supplying Weetabix or cornflakes. So we'll always look at what the client wants to do. But typically now we're supplying all-day coverage with the two of us, with the option for a digital download and a USB product, and then a fine art album, usually from Folio Albums.
Right, okay. Every client's getting an album, or that's an upsell that happens afterwards?
Very rarely do we sell one afterward, but 50% of them will book one up front, and we're trying to increase that, because our view is very much a photo isn't a photo until it's printed, really. But you know, a lot of couples, a lot of the young couples particularly, still prefer the idea of a USB or a digital-only option.
And I think one argument that Steve brings to the equation whenever we're talking to a couple, and I kind of have a go at him every time he says it, is that, you know, 5-6 years ago, we weren't even looking at phones to look at photos. We are now. What are we going to be looking at in 5 to 10 years time? What are we going to be looking at photos on? Whereas a book is always going to be a book.
Yeah, I agree. In my experience, couples still want to have that digital file, don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we do that routinely. We always give them two versions. We give them a high resolution version and a social media version, because, you know, if they're sharing things around Instagram and Facebook, that's free advertising for us.
And social media is so powerful these days.
Yeah.
Do you watermark those files?
No.
Do you ask them to tag you in the photos?
We ask them to tag us, yeah.
Okay. Just with the sales, I really want to focus on the sales for a little bit, because I'm curious to know that the corporate sales that you were doing, Steve, you know, you're dealing with, like I said, big corporations, multinationals. The sales techniques and strategies that you're using there, do they transpose into wedding photography or any kind of photography?
In a large way, I think it does, Andrew. Selling is all about people to people, and whether it's Sam and I supplying wedding photography to a local couple, or whether it's me working in a multinational deal, it's still people buying from people, really. Okay, the numbers might be bigger, the number of zeros might be bigger, but the actual transaction still involves people talking to people, people understanding each other's needs, people being able to empathize with people, really. And I think that's where we come in terms of how we approach our business now, really. So I think a good example would be things like wedding fairs. You know, we get a lot of bookings from wedding fairs. We do a lot of work at wedding fairs. And because I've run exhibitions in places like New Orleans and New York, and run exhibitions in 20 or 30,000 people at a time exhibitions, okay, it's a bit different to a wedding fair, but the principle still applies in terms of how you conduct yourself, how you interact with a customer, really. And I have to say, we do see some pretty horrible things when we do wedding fairs. You know, people have spent $300, $400 to be at a wedding fair and then clearly don't know how to conduct themselves and how to interact with a customer.
Yeah, for sure. Let's put the wedding fairs aside for a moment. Let's say a client's coming to see you, or they're responding to your website, maybe they're sending you an email.
Yeah.
When does the selling actually start?
I think it starts from day one, from the very moment that you get that inquiry, really. And I think part of it, first of all, is, are we right for them and they are right for us? Do they fit our typical kind of client? Because we're very much a documentary photographer. So if they're the sort of couples who are going to want 2 hours of photography on a beach somewhere, you know, with a waterfall behind them or something, that isn't us. So first of all, it's sort of filtering out the right clients for us that fit our profile and vice versa, really. And then I think, you know, people get a bit concerned about the word selling and, oh, God, it's selling, and we're giving people a hard sell. But actually, most of it is just actual common sense. So the first thing that I always say when we meet a couple is, you know, the couples want to talk about them. They want to talk about their day. They want to talk about the venue. She wants to talk about the dress, obviously, without the guy around. They want to talk about all the friends that are coming. They're excited. And really, our job is just to let them do that and tell us all about their plans and what they want to do. And from them doing that, really, we can very quickly pick up on, okay, so, you know, they're going to have the idea of an all-day coverage, for instance, will be something they're going to really like, because that's what we typically do. The fact that the groom's going to be getting ready somewhere different from the bride, again, that fits us because that's how we work. I typically start with the groom in the morning and Sam starts with the bride. So, you know, the key part of selling is listening and listening to what the client's saying to you. And then from that, sort of just drilling down into areas of opportunity for us that fit our profile and our skills.
But also, I think you need to actually putting across your passion for what you do.
Absolutely.
In the conversation and how important it is to you that they have such a special day and that, you know, we're there to help their day be as special and as perfect as possible. And if you can put that across to them during that conversation as well, they pick up on that and they feel your passion. And you can even do that in an email by just using certain words. So even with the initial contact that you have by email, if you can put across your passion in what you do, they pick up on that, and that's important to them because it's such a big day to them.
Absolutely.
If they feel your passion, it's kind of, do you know what I mean? It comes across.
What do you mean, Sam, by certain kinds of words in your email?
Things like, you know, the fact that, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, that, you know, we are here to help make your day as special as possible. Things like that.
It's about them, really, rather than about us, really, I think is the key thing. One example I was going to give, Andrew, when people talk in sales and sales skills about not peeing too early, apologies for the pee, but what they mean by that is not presenting too early. You know, I think what happens in people who aren't inexperienced in sales skills and how to conduct themselves, as soon as somebody shows an interest in their product, we want to talk about what we do. We want to say how good we are. We want to say how great we are. We want to get examples out. We want to get albums out. You know, think about the last time you went to buy a camera in a camera store, yeah? And you went up to the counter and you say, you're thinking of buying a camera. If the guy behind the counter immediately gets the box out and starts saying, you want this camera and I think you need this one and here's all the features you want, you're going to feel pretty unhappy about that because he hasn't asked you anything about the type of camera you want. He hasn't asked you your budget. He hasn't asked you the type of photography you do. And that's what I mean by peeing too early. It's very easy to sort of get into presentation mode without actually doing some questioning and really understanding what these guys are all about. And I think those skills apply exactly to the wedding business. You know, we all want to start showing our work because we all love what we do, but actually the first thing to do is actually understand what the customer wants, because you know what you normally do might not be quite what they're looking for to start with. Does that make sense?
It does. So I'm curious then, how do you handle an email inquiry asking about your prices? You know, the couple might say, you know, or the bride says, we love your work. We're interested in booking you. How much do you charge?
Well, the prices are on the website and we make no secret of that. We don't try and hide price. You know, we're proud of our price, really. So, you know, we'll refer them straight to the price list. And I think in some respects, that's a filter as well. If you don't get any response to that, then I think you know straight away that we're probably going to be too expensive for them. And one thing we always do, by the way, in an email, we always agree that we're going to contact them again at a certain time. We don't just leave it floating.
Or arrange a meeting.
Yeah, so, you know, we're going to come back to you and give you a call. Will Tuesday or Wednesday be suitable? That's the old alternative close, they call that.
And I think one thing that we've found that works is, you know, we'll arrange a meeting or we'll suggest that we have a meeting, because once we get actually in front of them, if we haven't met them before, then normally we can sell ourselves there and then.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if we can get them to agree to have a meeting, then we can focus then on that meeting. And the meeting is where we will sell ourselves, basically, and sell what we do and who we are and the fact that we are, you know, what they want, really.
I think that's really important. And I know there are photographers out there who'll get weddings and shoots for many thousands of pounds, and they turn up on the day not having met the client, and I admire them for being able to do that, but we would never do that. It's something we probably couldn't do and we just wouldn't do. We nearly every time, I think, we will meet our clients beforehand, and the chemistry is so important. Then Sam always says about the fact that particularly from her perspective, with the brides in the morning, you know, she's going to be with them in areas of the state of undress all the way through until, you know, the party. We're typically with our clients 12 to 14 hours. And if they've never met us, they don't know what we look like, they don't know how we sound, you don't know how we conduct ourselves, then, you know, I think both of us would feel awkward about that, yeah?
Yeah. Basically, what I say every time we have a meeting is, regardless of who you choose to be your photographer at the end of the day, whether it be us or whether it be somebody else, you have to feel 100% comfortable with them because they are with you for such a long period of time in the day. I mean, we've been to weddings before where the bride and groom have been looking to see where the photographer is and what he's doing because they're worried about what he's doing and the fact that he's not doing what he should be doing. If you feel comfortable with your photographer, you're not going to be worrying about that. You're going to be enjoying your day, forgetting about what they're doing and just let them get on with it.
Absolutely. We've moved away from selling skills a bit, Andrew. Did I kind of answer the question there?
It did, but Sam said something that piqued my interest because I think, you know, Sam said there that once you're in front of the couple, once the couple are in front of you at a meeting, then that's when you can concentrate on selling yourself. And I think for me and the listener, you know, we all have a lot more success booking the wedding once the client is in front of us because it's easy to build that rapport. So do you guys do anything special or specific to get from the email inquiry to the face-to-face meeting?
Not really. I think we just emphasise the importance of a face-to-face meeting if they're serious, really, and if they're really going to just do the booking us. And if they decline that, then I think our view would be then they're probably not really that interested in booking us, really. They're just going around looking at alternatives and we're probably not right for them and vice versa. So we don't have a studio, Andrew. You know, we work from our home. So we would typically meet clients in a pub or a cafe or a bar and feel like neutral territory, if you like. And again, if the client's isn't happy to do that, and I don't think we've ever had anybody say no, I don't want to do that, but if they weren't happy to do that, I think again it's a way of almost filtering out sort of the right clients for us and for that matter the right photographers for them, really.
Okay, how long does it take, or talk me through the process from that email inquiry to, I don't know, I guess it's a phone call first and then the face-to-face inquiry. Is it one email and then you're asking for a meeting, or is it a multiple emails with simple questions and then a phone call and then a meeting? Like, how does that part work?
I'm a great fan of email, period. Email is a great way of confirming information, sharing information. It's a lousy way of selling because it's unidirectional. So sooner we can either have a telephone conversation or better face-to-face, the better, really. So we would ask a couple to meet up with us pretty much straight away, really. What would happen, let's talk you through. We get an inquiry. We then say, thanks for getting in contact. Here's some more details. Here's some examples of our work. You'll find our prices here. We're going to give you a call on Wednesday or Thursday to see what you think, yeah?
How have you already got their phone number?
Because they've come to us through the website, we use a contact form. If it's an inquiry through a wedding fair, then we always ask that anyway. We use a booking form that we capture their details from.
Okay, so on your contact form, is the phone number a prerequisite?
Yes.
Okay, so you have to give their phone number.
And more often than not, people give that anyway.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So you reply via email, but tell them in that first email that you will be calling them on Tuesday or Wednesday, whichever one's better, to follow up.
Yeah. That's a very old selling technique. And I don't like to talk about selling techniques as if it's some kind of black art, but it's the old sort of, you know, you want to buy this car, do you want it in blue or red? Or, you know, do you want a tie in red or green for Mr. Customer? It's kind of assuming that you want it. It's just a question of which one do you want, really. So by putting that expectation that you're going to contact them again, it doesn't leave it hanging. It doesn't leave you floating. You know, I read lots of posts in Facebook groups saying this customer contacted me and I've heard nothing since. Well, it's probably because they're not expecting you to contact them, really. And if you haven't agreed that or implied that you're going to contact them, then your reason for contacting them again, really, is a little bit, comes across almost a bit desperate, perhaps.
Right. What would you say to the younger photographer that's listening? Mm. And I heard this from Gary Vaynerchuk in his recent book, saying that younger people, younger couples, they don't want to be contacted by phone. They want to talk via SMS or Messenger.
If it works for them, great. It wouldn't work for us. I think, you know, as I said before, email, SMS, Facebook message, it's a great way, you know, like we've set this meeting up today, Andrew, we've done that by email and by Messenger, we've agreed times and things, but I don't think we'd have the interview by SMS.
Definitely not.
Probably wouldn't work for a podcast, you know, and I think if I'm going to spend that kind of money on wedding photography or anything else for that matter, I expect to have a conversation at least or a face-to-face meeting with somebody.
I think we've done Skype before with couples who have been out of the country.
Yeah.
But we've never really had an SMS conversation with couples before, unless we've already spoken to them and we're further down the line.
Yeah.
Right. So, Sam, when you go to a pub, say, for this initial meeting, do you both always go, or is it whoever's available? How does that work?
No, we both go.
Okay. So it's an excuse to go out and have a drink and some dinner as well?
Sometimes.
It's a business cost, of course.
Very good. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, one of our USPs is it's two of us, you know, and we actively promote ourselves. I keep selling sale, but we actively market ourselves as two photographers. It's a differentiator. So if any one of us turns up, then it's kind of not the full deal, really. And they're going to have two photographers on the day if they book us. So it's important they meet us both beforehand, really.
And it takes us back to what we said before. You know, they need to feel comfortable with both of us. If they've not met both of us because they've not met us at a wedding fair or something, then they're not going to know that if we're not both at the meeting.
Correct.
Right, okay. You mentioned USP there, Steve, you know, and Sam talked about selling yourselves to the couple at that meeting. I know you've talked about having them talk about themselves and making the day and the meeting about them and their wedding. Are you doing any other kind of selling at that meeting as far as products and packages, or are you just trying to close the fact that they want to book you for their wedding at that stage?
What we're trying to close, to use the term, is to close on commitment of some sort. It's whatever is the next stage. The next stage might be we've agreed that we're not right for each other and we'll both move on, which doesn't really happen very often. But no, we will always take along a sample of our albums. We'll always take along an iPad to show our work if necessary. We'll always take along our cameras. The fact that we use a small Fuji camera is part of our sales presentation as well. You know, we're not going to point a massive big white lens in somebody's face. So we always take that along as well. And then normally, you know, there's a lot of talk in selling about closing as if it's some sort of big hurdle to overcome. Normally it's just the logical progression, really, and it's really what happens next. You know, you had a conversation, you talked about it, you know, the question might be, is there anything we haven't covered, you know, anything else you'd like to know? And if there is, then, you know, we'll happily address that now. And then normally it's just a case of, well, we've gone through this, we've talked about that, you know, we've gone on well today, what would you like to do next, really? And just leave it there, really. And you're pretty clear. It's not that often you actually get people then get their checkbook out and write a check or get a credit card out there and then. But I think you're pretty clear at that stage. You know, we met a couple on Monday this week who got married in 2019 at a really nice venue in East Anglia. And I think even if you're not somebody with professional selling skills, I think you pretty quickly get a feel for whether they're going to like you or not, whether they're going to go with you. And at the end of that meeting, it was a case of, right, well, we'll send a contract to you, we'll send a booking form, and here's how you pay the deposit, and we'll hear from you by next week. And everybody was nodding. And the power of a nod is so important as well. When people nod and say, yeah, uh-huh, and all the things that we're doing on this call, then again, you know, then you're pretty much on board and you've pretty much got a deal closed, really.
I can imagine if you two are there together, Sam and Steve, that you two would be nodding, you know, the whole way through the conversation. I mean, you're almost sending a signal to the couple.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's that old NLP stuff, you know, where you're actually sort of communicating without actually talking. Again, I've done a little bit of that. I read a bit about it. I don't claim to be an expert, but it's a fascinating field. And body language and communicating without talking is actually, you know, a really important part of it as well, I think.
Smiling, you know, yeah.
So, Sam, when you turn up to these meetings, say at the pub, you know, is it you or Steve, you know, one of you guys offering to buy a round of drinks? Are you buying snacks? Is it sit down and chat first about business? Like, how does it work?
Steve will normally immediately say, can I buy you a drink? What would you like? Either they'll say no or more often than not, they'll take up his offer. And then while he's kind of getting the drinks at the bar, I'll kind of start the conversation and say, so how far into your plans are you? Have you got, you know, because hopefully they've got the venue and the date sorted by then, but sometimes they haven't. So they've got the venue, the date. Have you planned anything else yet? You know, have you sorted any other things out? You know, how far along are you with your plans? And start the conversation that way, but not really get into the conversation properly until Stevie gets back.
I guess she's the icebreaker, really. Sam's got natural interpersonal skills and naturally likes people and is generally interested in people. You've done a fair bit of bar work in your time and you love the sort of buzz of talking to people and finding out about people. I guess you're naturally nosy, if I could say that. So getting me out of the way and buy the drinks actually is a good start of that process because it breaks the ice, literally. It gets them talking. So by the time I'm sitting down with a pint of English beer or a couple of Cokes or whatever, it's already got the ice broken. It's got people talking and I just chip in and I just start listening from then on, really.
It's like this Monday, the couple we met, she was from France, he was local. You know, we met in a pub that's literally just reopened after a refurb. So we're saying, oh, have you been here before? And he then started talking about his parents. So, you know, it's just an icebreaker before Steve comes back, really.
Then that's the salesman.
If a couple are having, say, Cokes, for example, or orange juice, will you still order alcohol or would you be guided by what they do?
Pretty much guided by what they do, really, yeah. And normally one of us is driving anyway, so normally it's Diet Coke, isn't it, really,
yeah.
In all honesty.
Okay, so, but if they order a pint each, will you have a pint?
If it's me driving, I might have a half or a shandy or something like that.
Okay, so you pretty much will be guided then by what the client's doing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool, okay. What about later, you know, down the track? So the couple's booked, you photographed their wedding. Do you do any more selling after the wedding day?
Yeah, we never stop, really. So probably 50% of the time that we book a couple, we will give them an engagement shoot, and we actually package that as a free of charge benefit, if you like. So we would meet them for an hour at a local beauty spot somewhere in Oxford or Blenheim Palace or Waddesdon Manor and places like these. And we package it as an opportunity for them to get to know us a bit better.
They're stately homes, by the way.
Right, okay. I had a bit of an idea, but I was going to ask.
You must know our palaces.
So do you have to pay to go to those places to photograph?
Sometimes. We've got good relationships with these places. They're all run by something called the National Trust, which is a charity here, and we're members of that. So we just flash our National Trust cards, and normally they're pretty relaxed about it. You know, because we're a documentary style anyway, you know, we don't turn up with massive lighting rigs and, you know, humongous sets, really. We just say to the couples, just forget we're here, really, and go for a walk and enjoy being together, you know. So it's not a big, heavy session, Andrew. But what we use that opportunity for is, yes, we use it as a touch base, but it's also a chance to sell as well. So, for instance, we can sell a guest signing book for the day, for the wedding day, based on the photos that we've took today from the engagement shoot, which is a nice sort of couple hundred pounds upgrade.
But it's also a way to get to know the couple better.
Yeah.
You get to know their personalities, so you can help to use those personalities to bring out their personalities in their photos a bit better on the day, really.
Yeah.
And it helps get them a little bit more relaxed about us because they see how we work. They see how we work together. If we go together, because sometimes we don't do engagement shoots together, but it's another selling opportunity because it's us selling us to them, but also getting to know them better and getting them to feel more comfortable with how we work, the way we work, and getting to know them.
But we do sell prints on the back of that as well, Andrew, because we use Shootproof, the hosting site, which is linked in with a UK lab in Scotland called Loxley. So it's an opportunity for us to actually sell prints and canvases from the engagement shoot, because we explain to them that's what's going to happen. They can view them on there. But actually, you know, if they or their family want to actually buy any photos from today, they can do so. And, you know, we typically get, you know, a few hundred pounds a session from that as well. So, it's, you know, it's worth doing that as well as an extra upgrade, really.
So that's an online sales. That's not in person.
No.
Okay. And do you have any, I guess, tricks when you're selling online like that, you know, to get your £200 or £300 order? Do you structure your pricing in a way that makes it attractive to spend that much?
We'll give them a discount code, which makes it feel like we're treating them special, really. Of course we are, but yeah, we'll give them a discount code off our prices. We don't mark our prices up crazily on those things, Andrew. It's very tempting to sort of say, well, that's our cost price from the lab, we're going to mark it up humongously. We try and be a little bit realistic about that, really. But what we will do is give them a discount code of, say, 25% off or something like that, but it's got to be used by the end of this month or the end of next month or whatever.
Some of our couples tend to use one of or a couple of those photos, but like save the date cards, you know, so we kind of bring that into the conversation during the engagement shoot. So you can use those for that. On the day, they'll have like a guest signing book that they can add photos to.
Yeah, mention that.
So anything like that. We've had couples that actually use photos from the engagement shoot as the table settings. So for the different tables, they've got different photos from the engagement shoot.
Right, okay, nice. So if a couple wants to use photos for anything, whether it's you know, the signing book or the table place settings, they have to pay for those, though. They don't give them to them for free.
No, that's right.
Okay. Is that your dog I can hear?
It is.
No, it's funny. Is he trying to get in or is he getting upset because he's not the centre of attention?
Both.
No, he's trying to get in because he's shut outside the door.
What sort of dog is he or she?
Spaniel.
Not a cocker spaniel.
Yeah,
I've got two. Oh, they are crazy dogs.
Tell me about it.
My wife, Linda's family had one and it was a nutcase.
Yeah, these two are as well. Yeah, they're okay. They're okay where they are. Yeah.
All right. So I guess when I was asking about upselling, you know, after the day, are you upselling albums or extra sides in an album after the wedding day, or everything is paid for and sold before then?
No, we often will get extra pages and extra add-ons to the album. So our standard album is a 30-page or 15-spread album, yeah, which we position to the client is around 80 photos, something like that. And we let them pick the photos, but normally what happens, of course, is they can't get 80. They can only get down to 120, 140, 150. So then we will design the album on that basis. But unfortunately, you know, we've had to use an extra 7 or 8 spreads. And the cost is this. You know, do you want to go ahead or do you want to have another go at cutting the photos down to 80? And probably 99 times out of 100, they'll say, oh, no, we'd love it like it is. We use Smart Albums. I know you had the guy from Smart Albums a while ago on the podcast, and we love that. And we use the online proofing that those guys have. So the client can see the album and pretty much nearly always loves it the way we've designed it and is happy to pay a bit extra for the extra pages required, really.
Okay. And is there any incentive for them to take the design as it is? Any sort of, I guess, a discount code or something like that?
No, pretty much. We just go with the fact that normally I just love what we've done, really. Sam does the albums. I hate doing albums, I'll be honest, even with Smart Albums. But Sam does the albums. And, you know, we don't do it in a deliberate way of saying, oh, you know, we're going to deliberately use more pages than they've paid for. You know, we will design the albums. Sam will design the album as she thinks is right for the client. And we'll share that with them and they can approve it or ask for changes any moment in time. But as I say, normally it involves probably at least another 5 or 6 spreads because they just can't get down to that kind of number. Because the photos too much for
it. So you and Sam aren't really seeing the clients again after the wedding day. Everything's done online again.
Pretty much, although we also, for the digital side of things, although again, as I mentioned earlier, we use ShootProof. One of the things that I'm quite strong about is if they're spending that kind of money with us, even just for a digital package, we just can't give them a bog standard USB stick from Staples or somewhere. So we actually use a product from a company called Sim Imaging over here, which is a photo folio, which has a USB key in the back. It's quite a nice product, has received value to the client, really. And we'll normally deliver those by hand, unless they're obviously the other side of the country, because it's just that sort of final, you know, how are things, how are you feeling, you know, how's married life. And it's just a chance also just to touch base with them and get some referrals as well, because we're very keen on getting referrals, of course. So we hand deliver it then. There's a chance. Oh, by the way, you know, any chance if you get 5 minutes, just to leave us a little review on Facebook or on Google or whatever, really. And it kind of just signs things off, really, rather than just sending it to the post and saying bye. You know, it's probably most of our clients have carried on being Facebook friends afterwards as well. So we're interested in their life and what's going on in their lives. And we chat with them regularly on Facebook and we get referrals that way as well. And again, I think that's part of just making sure the final sign off at the end of the process, if you like, is done properly, really.
You said you're getting referrals. Are you actually asking for referrals from the clients?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
How do you do that?
By asking them. No magic skills.
Really? It's that simple.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, if the client loves what you've done, and, you know, that's usually the case, it's not really a big thing. You're not asking them to do anything particularly out of the way. And, you know, they love showing their wedding photos to their friends and family and referring people to who took them. So, you know, all we're asking them to do is just drop a brief line on Facebook or Guide for Brides, which is a big wedding directory here that's very active in the south of England. You know, we get a lot of reviews and testimonials on there as well. And sometimes they're done spontaneously before we can even ask them. But we will ask them. We don't bug them. You know, we don't ring them up 2 months later and say, hey, where's that review you promised us? You know, we ask them nicely. And, you know, I think most people, I'm a great believer in treating people the way you'd want to be treated, Andrew, really. And, you know, I'm a professional salesperson, but I'm the easiest person to sell to on earth, really, in the shop or whatever, if I'm treated the right way. If I'm, you know, if it's, the process is handled properly. So, if I buy something and then somebody asks for a review, then I'm made to police to do it. You know, it's not a big deal at all, really, particularly in this day and age when it's just a 2-minute job on a website somewhere.
For sure. Sam, you know, with Steve's experience in selling, do you know, or do you sense when he's selling to the client? Or do you ever think he's going a bit hard here? I hope he backs off a little bit.
He doesn't go hard, but yeah, he's selling all the time. So I think it's in his blood. It's just the way he is. So he's very good at selling what we are and who we are, whereas I sell me.
Yeah.
And my passion. So that's the difference between the two of us, really. And I suppose it works well together when we're having our conversations with the couple.
I'm really keen on this, so Andrew, that, you know, if you've got your own business, you're a salesperson, whether you want to be or not. Everybody has to be a salesperson. And that doesn't mean you have to be some kind of, you know, toe in the door, you know, flash sales spiff kind of guy. You know, you just need to have the basic understanding of the process. Selling is like anything else. It's a process. And yeah, if you understand the process and the ins and outs of that process, then, you know, you become far more successful.
One way of looking at it is when you're initially at the wedding fair, you'll get some couples or some photographers that will stand at the back of the table or sit at the back of the table. And, you know, we always stand at the front. We're there. We're eager to say hello as people walk past. You know, we're not looking bored or looking at our phones at all. In fact, we won't get our phones out at all while we're at a fair like that. So, you know, we're ready to interact with couples as soon as they come on towards our stall. And even if it's just to say hello, so we've already got a photographer, fine, nice to meet you, and move on to the next. But you're not closed by sitting down with your head down on your phone, or you're not behind the table. You're there in front, ready to talk to the customer.
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
Have you ever had an embarrassing moment or a stuff up that you're happy to share?
Well, yeah, I had one last Friday, actually, where I mentioned the Fujis we use. I use the spider holster system, so I walk around with two clips on my waistband on my suit. So I, you know, look like the fastest gun in the West with two cameras on my waist. And I don't know what I was doing. I was absent-minded, not really concentrated. It was that sort of bit of dead time, really, when perhaps the groom had got to the venue a bit too early and there wasn't enough guests there to take any photos. So I'm sort of looking for things to photograph. And I went to put my X-T2 and 16mm lens in the holster and missed. And it fell from about 4 foot, probably.
Ooh.
Thankfully, onto a wooden floor. I did let out a little expletive. Thankfully, there weren't many guests around, but the groom did come up to me and say, I guess we're down to one camera then today.
All I can say is he's glad it happened to him and not to me.
Yes, I can imagine that.
So far it seems okay, but we'll find out. We've got a wedding again tomorrow, so. But no, seriously, it seems to have survived perfectly well. But the moral is don't be absent-minded putting your camera away.
Look, guys, this has been an absolute pleasure. It really has. Where is the best place for the listener to check out more of your work and see what you guys do?
So our website is just samandstevephotography.com, not co.uk.com. We're also on Facebook and on Instagram as Sam and Steve Photography, and also on Twitter. And yeah, I guess that's probably the best place, really. And if they're anywhere in the southeast of England, come and see us. Come and say hi. That includes you.
Definitely. I would love to do that at some stage. I really would. Sam, one thing just occurred to me. I mean, I know you guys have talked a lot about documentary style, and I know that's your style. And I know there are listeners who shoot in that style or want to shoot in that style. But when it comes to engagement shoots, they get totally turned off by that fact because they feel it can't be in that documentary style. They're not being true to the genre. How do you approach an engagement shoot if you say you're a documentary photographer?
Well, we still don't really pose. So though it is a little more formal, you know, I'll say, oh, just go for a walk a little way that way and come and turn around and just walk back towards me, or, you know, just sit on the bench. But I'm not saying, oh, just turn a little bit that way, just turn a little bit that way. It's still quite natural, but we are suggesting certain places for them to stand a little bit more and getting them to kind of, but it's not posed. It's still
more direction than posing.
We just say, really, just enjoy, you know, day out in the country, and we'll have a chat while we're doing it, really. And often we'll just talk about the day and the plans, and we'll be photographing while we're talking, really. And it's very relaxed and informal.
For sure. Cool. Guys, again, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing everything you have. Yeah, it's been great to learn from you guys and hear what you're doing and hear about how successful your business is. So, again, thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate it, Andrew. Thanks for your time.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Sam and Steve Vaughan of Sam and Steve Photography. Guys, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for sharing so much about your business, the way you do things, the way you sell. It was all enlightening, and it was a real pleasure to chat to you. So again, thank you so much. For you, the listener, I hope you got as much from Sam and Steve as I did. I hope they helped you realize that selling doesn't have to be a dirty word, that it doesn't have to feel uncomfortable. It can be natural and nice and not a scary thing at all. If you want to follow up with Sam and Steve, if you have a question that I didn't ask that you'd like to put to them, hit them up in the show notes, in the comments area of the show notes, and you can find them over at photobizx.com/221. In those show notes, I've got links to anything and everything that Sam and Steve mentioned. I've got examples of their work. And like I said, you've got the comments area at the very bottom if you do have a follow-up question or you just want to say thanks for coming on the show.
It's shout-out time.
I've got one big shout-out for today's episode, and it goes to Dublin wedding and portrait photographer Adrian from Fire Child Photography. She says in her, well, the heading for her iTunes review is a weekly dose of photography, business inspiration, humor, and tactics. Now, I'm good with all that, although I'm not sure about the humor part. I don't know. This is meant to be a serious podcast, Adrian. I don't know where the humor comes in. But look, I want to say thanks for leaving your review. You've said some lovely things there. Let me paraphrase a little bit for you, the listener, if you haven't seen the review inside iTunes. Adrian says that she's been listening to PhotoBizX for over 2 years and cannot recommend it highly enough. It does exactly what it says on the tin and then some. I love that. Adrian goes on to say that she likes the way I ask my questions. And if I don't get the answer that I'm looking for, I go after it a little bit more. And she said that she always gives me a mental high five when I do that. So that's awesome. Thanks, Adrian. I also love what you say about the premium membership and the Facebook group that that comes with a subscription of being a premium member. Adrian says it's only one of two groups that she engages with or reads regularly. It's got a solid community vibe, full of photographers at all stages in their business, and it's a great resource for everyone. No judgment or trialing, only the good stuff. That's so good. And I totally agree, Adrian. I think that's one of the massive benefits of being a premium member. So again, Adrian, thank you so much for leaving that review. It's a massive help to me. It helps other photographers find the podcast in iTunes. And it also helps me know that I'm on the right track. And hopefully I get to meet you in person in August of 2018. That would be awesome. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the show. I hope you have an awesome week. I look forward to chatting with you in the comments area or inside the members Facebook group if you are a premium member. Don't forget, Sam and Steve are also part of the members Facebook group. So if you're a member and you have a follow-up question for them, you can talk to them in the group. And if you're listening to the free podcast, obviously you have the comments area and the show notes there for you with links to anything and everything that was mentioned in today's episode. And if you want to talk more about planning and holidays and trips and cycling and all that stuff, I'd love to. I could talk about that stuff all day, every day. Alrighty, have an awesome week and I will chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.